pissed my wife off, and she said she was going to disrupt the podcast. Is there a podcast to tell you what are the best flowers to order?
Crack open a cold box of wine or pour something cold on ice because it's the Binge Watchers Podcast.
Getting back to what makes this podcast great, talking about movies we love and sharing them with you, tonight we're talking about an awesome 80s horror series that we're all surprised we have not covered fully, the Night of the Demons trilogy. So this is, in fact, Night of the Demons, a retrospective. But before we dive deep into this demonic terror, let's see. What have we heard about movies and TV headlines? Let's go to the guys. What have you guys heard? Let's go to Nick. Nicky Lates, what do you got for us?
I have heard that Coming to America 2 will end up going straight to streaming on Amazon Prime.
Oh, Prime picked it up, huh?
Yeah, I was kind of like wondering, and we haven't seen a trailer or anything yet, but it's kind of interesting. All these movies are now, companies like Prime or Netflix are just like, well, shoot, you're going to come out in December.
That is big news, actually, because that was sure shit going to go to theatrical because it's a big movie.
Oh yeah,
it's a sequel to Coming to America, and they did this play on words with the title. It's the number 2 instead of the letter 2, right? So TO, it's the number symbol. That has a good story. Have you guys heard about this, Nick? Do you know about the story?
No. What's the story?
Well, because it's Eddie Murphy's movie, right? Like where he came, he was a prince of an African country, right? Comes to America, right? Yeah. Works at like a competitor McDonald's,
so to speak. Yeah.
Wants to marry the daughter but can't because he's supposed to be in an arranged marriage, right? Great cast, right? Like Louis Anderson, obviously Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall. I forget who plays the dad of the McDowells, which is like the fake McDonald's, but he's a really good actor too.
You've John seen him in 100 movies.
Yeah.
John Amos, he was in Good Times.
Yeah, you're right.
One of the diehards.
And he's coming back too, supposedly, for the sequel, but they said Leslie Jones is going to play the mother of like this illegitimate American son of Eddie Murphy's character. Like that's why he's coming back to America to find his kid. This is great.
Nice.
And like pitted against Leslie Jones, like she's really funny. So it'll be cool to see. Oh, and supposedly playing like a brother-in-law or an uncle or something is Tracy Morgan. Mm. So that might be funny
nice.
Too.
Isn't Wesley Snipes in it too? I thought.
Yeah, Wesley Snipes is the brother of the girl that was part of the arranged marriage, like who Eddie Murphy's character was supposed to marry but then did not.
I wonder
if he's going to be like the villain maybe. of the movie, like coming back for some revenge, or maybe they ended up being best buds, who knows, like maybe they're friends, I don't know.
Yeah,
but it'd be
maybe
funny if he was like a rival.
The IRS.
What?
What maybe about? The villain is the IRS.
Oh, you mean that's why they have to make this movie, because Eddie Murphy has tax problems? Or oh no, you're saying because Wesley Snipes had tax problems.
Yeah.
Is he never going to live that down with you, Adam, or what? This is like the third Wesley Snipes tax joke you've made. Like, we were talking about Blade, and you're like, oh, taxes.
Hey, no, I wasn't even, like, you're taking an unknown territory for me. I was just thinking, like, if you're coming to America, and you're a wealthy prince from somewhere else, and you got a kid here, you're just going to have to deal with the tax man. I'm just saying.
Oh. Well.
The tax man.
Dave's only one office removed from the tax man in his day job, so maybe that's cutting too close to home for Dave. Let's just stick to the movies, all right?
He's being quiet, yeah.
Yeah, Dave works for the man.
Yeah.
All right. Well, in some way, we all pay taxes. We all kind of work for the man. We're all screwed.
We're all
okay.
Into the system.
God, and taxes are too close to politics. We're gonna fuck up the show in the first 3 minutes. Yeah. Okay. Who has some other movie-related news and not tax-related news? Dave, you got some news?
Yeah. Oh, I got something.
Did I say Adam? I said Dave. You got some news?
Oh, sorry.
It was close.
Oh man.
So kind of going similar along with what Nick was going on. So Disney Pixar's Soul, which was supposed to go into theaters, is now going straight to Disney Plus. And the other big news is Disney says it's focusing more on streaming now. So this is the way the world going, or movie world going here on out.
I mean, well, California Disneyland isn't even open anymore, right?
Oh, and they keep Disney making world, fun of they keep making fun of Mickey for not being able to open his doors.
Yeah.
They give him a hard time in South Park all the time about it. It's funny.
But yeah, they're foregoing like the Mulan model. Like, I guess that didn't work for in the long run. So they're just like, oh, here it is on Disney Plus. Don't pay extra on Christmas Day. So we'll have Coming to America and then a new Disney Pixar movie.
Yay.
Wow.
All this Christmas.
Crazy.
Yeah, they got a lot of negative PR for charging on top of the service.
So yeah. It bombed pretty much.
I don't know if it bombed, but I don't think it was as lucrative as they wanted.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I think it did better than Tenet in theaters here in the U.S., but...
Oh, it did?
Tenet didn't do that good. Yeah, it did like 40-something million in the U.S. It's not...
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, Tenet's been like beat like two weekends in a row by like two new movies. Like, one was like The War with Grandpa with Robert De Niro.
But no one's making over like $1 million or $2 million at the theater. I mean, Hocus Pocus is actually doing better than those movies. It's crazy.
Well, that's right. Why when Nick, when you said that you could rent an AMC theater for $99,
oh my gosh,
I was like, yes. So you could make a cheap movie, and in theory, you could make a movie cheap, one. Rent a theater, and go number one at the real box office.
You really could.
Ooh, what a great idea!
Actually, at least top five. Some theater did, or some movie did that earlier this year. Ragtag. You heard about that, Nick? Right? The guys that did, I can't even remember the name of the movie, but they did just that, basically.
Yeah, all they wanted to, for one day, they just wanted to like be the number one movie in America, and they nailed it. They got it.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Wow. Wow.
It might take more than one theater, though, right? Maybe four? A handful?
Well, this was like during the height of when no theaters were open. Now they probably couldn't do that.
Yeah, actually, yeah. This was like...
Yeah, you'd have to have some legitimacy to open in enough theaters to justify.
Hmm. That's too bad. It still sounds like a good idea. I don't know if anybody has the scratch to do it, but it sounds like a great idea.
Well, let's slap something together, boys.
On it.
Well, what else can you tell us, Adam? What have you heard in the wide world of movies and television?
Showtime announced that they're going to bring back Dexter for a limited series.
Mm.
So all the people that have been unsatisfied with how Dexter ended, they get to see him again, and hopefully with some space and time in between, we'll get like a really, really good mini season out of it.
Yeah, I don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't know how it's going to take shape, but they said that it's not going to undo, you know, the series finale. And I think the big thing of that, it's kind of early in the show, folks. But here's your first spoiler: the sister detective is dead, and she died in the finale. So, and she's not coming back. So if you're hoping for Jennifer Carpenter's character to show up, it ain't going to happen. And he's a lumberjack, so I wonder if they're going to start out with like a Montana chainsaw murder or something for him to solve, you know?
Yeah.
Because he went off into the woods at the end.
Anyone can come back, though, because he has a really vivid imagination. So
I mean, yeah, you're right. Like
I'm pretty sure he put his sister's body in the water at the end, just like he does all the other dead bodies.
I think so.
So I don't know.
Like he'll talk to her again in his imagination, and she'll be on set and potentially being a character.
Oh wait, you're saying she's going to take over as the mentor instead of seeing the foster father?
Yeah, she could be part of it, part of his, you know, entourage in his head.
Wow, what do you think outside of the box? Somebody else had an energy drink tonight. He's wide awake. He's got ideas. Oh man, that's actually pretty cool. I didn't even go there with that. That he could be motivated by another ghostly figure, you know, in his subconscious. That's pretty interesting, actually. That's a good angle. I don't know if they're going to write that in. There's no details, except for, hey guys, we're bringing him back. That's about it.
Cameos of like all our favorite characters from the show could come in and be different parts of his psyche, that things he has to address, like the missteps he could be making in life, like remember what you did to me or remember what happened to me, you know. There's a lot of fun there.
So they're saying to move along, they're saying that couples are either coming closer together or they're having love on the rocks during this pandemic time, right? Rob Riggles is getting divorced after 21 years.
Who's that?
Rob Riggles. He's like a comedian. He was in, he's Step Brothers. He's the guy that says he's going to eat a dick. He did it in International Waters. He doesn't like Will Ferrell's face. Like the buddy of the brother.
Yeah, and then the helicopter he ate a dick company. In 21 Jump Street.
Yeah, 21 Jump Street. Is he in 21 Jump Street? Oh, yeah, he gets his dick shot off as the villain in the first movie. Then he's also a cop in... There's a movie where guys imitate cops. Oh, Let's Be Cops.
He
plays the sergeant that helps him out. And he's also in Hangover, I think. One of the Hangover movies. Yeah, he's in the Hangover.
Yeah, he's a cop in that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, well, he's like a, you know... He was like a Marine in real life and then became an actor and a comedian, stand-up comedian. So it kind of fits in his lifestyle or his persona or whatever. So, look, everybody falls in line with typecasting. It just happens. They're willing to pay you for this, and that's what you get paid for. It happens to everyone. So let's see.
There's like a TV show right now where it's a mini golf competition that he does. Never watched it, but I know he does it.
Yeah, he's like hosting the show.
Yeah, it's like holy, I don't know. It's a mini golf show.
Yeah. Phil Collins' wife dumped him in a text. He already has a new husband, right? You know the singer Phil Collins?
No.
Phil Collins' wife dumped him in a text?
Yeah.
Take a look at me now.
Now he's trying to evict her from like this other house that they own together or something. I don't know, something ridiculous. The craziest thing that I read was like, I expect a lot of crazy shit from the youngest son from Home Improvement. Like, is he married some cultist and moved out somewhere and was making cheese or something weird? Or, no, going vegan and opening, like, a vegan alcohol joint. Or did something, whatever. He, like, the youngest one got into some weird shit. So when I first clicked open this clickbait story, I thought it was going to be a story about the younger son. But it was actually about Zachary Ty Bryant, like, choked his girlfriend nearly to death or something like that in Oregon.
Oh, wow.
I was like, what? Or Idaho or something. I was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, so like
Eugene,
I said,
Oregon, I remember
like
seeing
celebrity
that.
Marriages are just falling apart during the pandemic. Like, people are like spending too much time together. I don't know. Like, I don't know what's going on.
No, I mean, he just did a deep dive on her phone or something.
Yeah. This is what I meant pre-show when I said like all my news stories are like tabloid B stories, you know, like National Enquirer news level. The other things I learned was like, there's all these rumors floating around about Cary Grant, you know, like supposedly he was bisexual and like he jammed on LSD. I could buy the LSD. I don't know about other stuff, but there's all these stories coming out. I don't know if they're going to do a movie or make a book about him, but.
Like, how are these stories coming out? Like, all of a sudden, like somebody found his phone?
I don't know.
They didn't even have cell phones then, like.
I think it's my job just to tell people the stories that are out there, not explain.
You got to go research.
You got to dig deeper than I could possibly tell you in a 45-minute show.
Oh, God, like, secret diary.
Oh, the diary of Cary Grant.
He has finally been found. And
his boyfriends are probably dying, but it's like they're probably the grandson of one of the boyfriends, you know, who's like doesn't have a shut-up clause because he's not getting Cary Grant money, you know what I'm saying? So he's just pulling out Grandpa's journal.
So, aging obsessed fans making up stories about. Okay, all right.
Wow, you got a real pickle. You like can't handle it. Here's something that Adam might like because this is a comic book artist. Are you guys familiar with the British comic book artist Alan Moore, who like co-created Watchmen? He also
did
the award-winning Saga of the Swamp Thing, which is like Swamp Thing's best
he's
run.
He's a prolific writer.
Yeah, he helped create 2000 AD, which introduced Judge Dredd, like in the comic books anyway. And he said that his favorite Batman of literally like all time, this is a recent story in like one of the Comic-Con whatever journal things.
It wasn't Adam West.
What?
It wasn't Adam West, right?
No, it is Adam West.
What?
It is Adam West.
His favorite Batman is Adam West.
Hey, time out, man.
Hey,
to me, this
Adam
is super.
Is cool.
This is super legit. You know why? Read the old comic books. Go back when it was the original run of Detective Comics, and then think about the '60s show. They followed the comics almost like a blueprint. Like the way Batman should be is actually the way Adam West portrayed him. Like, go back and read the comics, man. Like that's how Batman is. How he really legitimately is.
I hear you. at the very origin, though, in Detective Comics, they made him too dark and too gritty, and then they cartoonified it.
Oh, when he was shooting the gun?
Many
when he was first shooting the guns? Maybe, right?
When he was first, yeah. When he was first introduced, the original run, he was dark. And then they were like, this might be too much for kids. Comic Codes Authority was getting like hot and heavy about like censoring the story. So then they made it more fun and more and geared it more for children. And then
Adam West comes in, Batman.
And more accurately represents the retooling of the Batman.
I just
character.
Think it's cool that like a super famous comic book artist said that his favorite Batman was Adam West. Because I'm all in line with that. You know, I'm a big fan of Adam West Batman.
He's great. Yeah.
I'm not going to say that I don't like the original Batman, but I like them seriousing it up. Like put some nitty gritty in there. The Frank Miller twist to make it real world. Dark. I like that. Instead of shark repellent. But to each his own, I suppose.
And on that note, we'll be right back with our movie discussion after these messages. We're going to tell you about our Stars offer. All those great movies. Here we go. Get 7 days of free movies and shows on Stars. With a simple sign up, you can redeem the details at bwpodcast.com/stars-offer, STARZ-offer. And now back to the show. And now we're back, because literally you just heard me talking from like almost like another dimension about how you get great free movies on Stars. Tonight's movies are collectively the Night of the Demons series, and the original Night of the Demons, which came out in the 80s, and the other ones in the 90s, and the sequels. Night of the Demons, I don't know where they released it as Halloween Party, but apparently it was also released as Halloween Party. It's an 88 American horror film written and produced by Joe Augustine, directed by Kevin Tenney. The film tells the story of 10 high school seniors having a Halloween party in an isolated mortuary. Then the party turns into a nightmare, because they're going to do a seance as a party game, and they accidentally unlock the demon that lives in the crematorium. Trivia, it took place in, I don't know where it takes place, but it's supposed to be small town America, as all these movies are, but it was shot in outside of Los Angeles and took 2 months to shoot. I want to mention briefly the director here, because Kevin Tenney, he did the Witchboard movies, which are some of my favorites of the cheesy direct-to-video stuff. For horror films, I don't know if you guys have seen that, the Witchboard series.
I heard of them, but never seen them.
Yeah, no. Then he also did they're like Ouija board, like the witch comes out of the Ouija board and possesses people. It's kind of, and it obviously has like the schlocky detectives and the sex scenes and everything you need in a direct-to-video horror movie, you know what I'm saying?
That's good.
And, yeah. Were these before or after?
What? He did Witchboard 1 maybe before Night of the Demons, and then the other ones were in between his other movies. He did Demolition University with Corey Haim, which is actually, I think, the second or third movie in Corey Haim's Demolition trilogy. Yeah. it starts with Demolition High School, of all things. Chrissy Swanson is in one of them, I think. And but this guy's, check this out. He's the one that brought us Pinocchio's Revenge.
Oh, wow.
I never saw it, though.
Yeah. Oh, well, I thought you guys would have seen that. I guess I'm the
I've seen it, and that's why I'm like, eh.
All right, fine. Screw you. Okay. So,
I've only seen the
original. The original was followed by the sequels, Night of the Demons 2, which comes out in 94, and Night of the Demons 3 in 97, along with a remake in 2009. In Night of the Demons 2, Angela returns from hell to target her sister Melissa and their friends at a Catholic school that get drawn back to Hull House 6 years later. And Night of the Demons 3, released as Demon House in the UK. I don't know why they would release it as Demon House, but they did. That's the third film, and they released that direct-to-video. It also comes out in 97 by Paramount Pictures and Republic Pictures. There's also an R-rated and unrated version of this movie. In this one, teen vandals are hiding from the police in Hull House, and they run afoul of the evil waiting to entrap them, including the returning franchise vixen and archdemon Angela. That's one thing that's great about the series is they kind of created like a horror franchise killer in Angela, who gets possessed in the first movie and then comes back as like the main demon in each sequel. The remake sucks. Comes out in 2009. It's a remake of the first one. Same basic plot. There's a party with demons and there is an Angela, but it's obviously not the same actress. And it couldn't be, but by the time the early 2000s comes around, she'd probably be in her 50s or 60s, but
yeah, way too old.
Angela's like a not really the main thing in the remake, and like whatever. Like, it's one and done, which is, like, I could never watch the remake again. I turned it on, I watched it, I'll never go back to it.
I watched it 10 years ago, and I totally agree. I'd never want to see it again.
Yeah.
I have the same exact story as Nick.
Yeah.
The story. 10 years, done.
Done and done.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the freshest in Adam's mind, so if you briefly want to just tell us about the remake, we'll talk about it quickly, and then... Well, actually, no. We'll try to do this in order. Sorry, folks. Okay. I'll stick to my guns and what I wrote down on my notes. So let's go to first impressions and favorite bits from part one. Who's really excited to talk about part one? Does anybody like part one over the other over the rest of them?
Oh, hell yeah. Part one's
well,
the best
one. Well,
yeah,
dude. That's
all right. Okay, so Nick, you start with your first impressions and favorite bits from part one, and then we'll jump over to Dave.
All right. My first impressions is I love this movie, and my favorite part is Lawena Quigley's boobies and the lipstick trick.
Lipstick tits trick. All right.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. All right.
Oh, what's your first impression if you had to tell somebody about this movie?
Oh, fun, horror, haunted movie that has a lot of great kills, and I love it, and the soundtrack's amazing. It's fun. It's 80s captured in a time capsule. It's beautiful. And I love the opening credit scene.
The animation?
The animated.
Yeah, I thought that was really a cool way to open the movie. Yeah.
Nice. Dave, your first impression and favorite bits from part one.
It's hard to say first impression. This movie, I don't know when the first time I saw it. I definitely on VHS, but I love this movie. I love it. I just love this movie. Favorite bits. I don't want to get too long winded on.
Oh my god!
Impression.
That was incredible.
Love this movie.
Yeah, that's the best way. I have a few favorite bits, but the sour balls bit in the beginning that kills me every time. And something, as many times as I've seen this, I gasp in pain every time I watch it. But one of the near end where they're climbing the barbed wired wall and just like that each time kills me.
Oh yeah, having to climb the barbed wire to escape the demons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, going back to the sour ball thing, if you saw the sour ball quote in the beginning of the movie in that mini mart scene where she goes, "Do you guys have sour balls?" and they say yes, and then she says, "Well, then you don't get a lot of blowjobs." If you saw that scene, then you were watching the unrated cut. If you didn't see that scene, you watched the watered down R-rated cut.
Oh no!
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, yeah. I saw the unrated then.
Okay. Cool. That brings us to you, Double A. Your first impressions and favorite bits from part one.
I felt like it was good. I'm not enthusiastic in thinking that this is the first thing I should watch or anything. But there's a lot to say that is good about this movie. The demon that comes out, like that was a cool effect. The lipstick thing, where they switch from her having taken her, blouse open and then showing you the real thing and then cutting to an amazing facsimile to do that effect was just like the first time I didn't catch it. I'm like, what in the world just happened?
Yeah,
it makes you feel sick to your stomach. You want to double over watching that scene by itself. So that hit me.
What's weird is you were so enthusiastic in your text messages on Facebook Messenger about this one, or just in general, The Night of the Demons. I thought you were super pumped up. I thought you'd be like riveting over part one because it's the original, the OG. But it doesn't seem like it.
Well, the problem is I had watched The Night of the Demons before because we watched Demons and Demons 2.
Mm-hmm.
And the YouTube algorithm pointed me in the direction of Night of the Demons, and I went and checked that out.
Hmm.
And then, I ended up watching it after watching those two movies. So I was kind of spoiled on Demons and Demons 2, and then I watched this, and it felt like a step down. So there's no way for me to have a fresh take at this movie because of that experience.
Oh, because you're just comparing it to other horror movies with demons
yeah,
in it?
Yeah,
but they're wildly different movies.
Yeah,
though.
This
one's more campy and fun.
Yeah, this is like Breakfast Club with Exorcist.
I love the tone of this movie.
I do.
I had seen this movie, but I didn't remember the title. Okay. And John said it's like Breakfast Club. And then so when I went in and I was watching, I was like, oh, I've already seen this. And then but John said the Breakfast Club thing, and then I saw that, and the movie became a lot more fun for me because of that. I'm trying to think of
which is true, because like the kids in the beginning of the movie, they're not all friends. There's like kind of two groups of friends and then some oddballs, but they're all interested in partying at a haunted house, and so they all end up there, right? Then they start to get possessed, and then the survivors are trying to outrun the possessed ones. And then they have a couple good gimmicks, like Nick brought up the lipstick trick, which is like a famous movie scene. Like that's yeah. And then Angela dancing, like trying to seduce everybody at the party. And then she's, like I said, she's iconic. Like, she's to me like the girl from what's that movie, Slasher Camp? What is it called?
Sleepaway Camp.
Like, yeah, it's like the girl from Sleepaway Camp.
The girl with the thing.
Yeah. Like, they could have made three more Night of the Demons with Angela between the '80s and nineties. You know what I mean? They could have kept going, like Friday the 13th.
She could have been a Freddy if they had enough movies to support her.
So it's okay to say our first impression could be back when we watched it the first time. I mean, because literally, like, we're not new eyeballs on these movies because we're kind of coming back to them. But like, I rented Night of the Demons like 7 times from the video store. Like, I love this movie. Like, so if I had good. Like yeah, if I was renting two new movies and then I got a free third one, I'd grab Night of the Demons. Like, my favorite bit is probably the old man that wants to kill kids on Halloween by putting razor blades into the apples.
That's
and then
at
the end of the movie, his wife makes
itself.
A pie and he accidentally eats the bad apples and he dies horribly. And like that to me is incredible. Well,
that
you know?
Was amazing. That's like one of the best callbacks in a movie.
Yeah,
that I can recall, because there's so much time that passes between when that seed was planted and when you finally saw the fruition.
I mean, that's like creep show level shit. So like, I love the first movie for that.
Well, I love the little brother in this too. Like, he's
you mean Nick? That was Nick's first role, right? Nick,
you guys know I starred in this, right?
Yeah, that was Nick's first movie role.
That was
bodacious booby, or what does he say? Bodacious boobies, or
no? Anyway, talking about typecasts, Nick could be cast as a preteen surfer boy from the valley. You know what I mean? Like,
I mean, the valley. Why not? Right?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Oh man, let's jump right into part two.
I just need to mention one more thing: is the shot of the mirror that has broken after
Adam, hold your thoughts, because I don't know if you read the notes for tonight's episode. I'm going to say give the audience a final reason to revisit number one, but that's later.
Oh, my bad.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're jumping the shark, buddy.
My bad.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about
Let's go to number two. First impressions and favorite bits from part two. David, you're on the spot.
All right. I'm going to treat today like the first time I watched it, because I had next to no memory of this movie. Mm. I fucking love this movie. This is one of my new, I'm going to say discovered classics, even though I've seen it once before. This was like fresh for me. Some of my favorite bits in this is if you watch this, watch some of the background dancing of people at the dance. It's fucking amazing. And there's a lot of, like, let's just be real. The cigarette, the tits that grab.
I was going to reference. Yeah.
It's just like, what the
oh my god!
It took me by such surprise. I forgot about that. I'm like, okay, you got my attention now. I didn't spend tons of time, but I was Catholic, so a lot of this stuff like killed me too. Like, leave enough room for the Holy Spirit. I don't know. This movie just worked on me in a real way today.
That really happened at them school dances too.
It did. It was intense.
What I love about the sequel is they tie it in directly to the first one. They're like, it's 6 years later, Angela's still haunting the house. It has a great opener. Some couple's like broken down, or they're parishioners. Were they parishioners or broken down? I don't remember. I watched it earlier today, but I forget.
They were evangelists.
Oh yeah, okay. They were parishioners. Like, they were going around
saved.
Yeah, they were recruiting people to. Yeah, exactly. They were like Jehovah's Witnesses going in to recruit people, and like, and then she says, "We're having devil's food cake," and she murders them. And she's still there, clearly being demonic. And then one of the main characters is supposedly her sister, and like, and then they build on the mythology. They say like, Angela sent her parents a note at like after being dead for a year or whatever, all these kids died in the house, sent a postcard to her parents, then they commit suicide. Then the younger sister gets shipped off to the Catholic boarding school, and then like they're all into it, so they want to go back, and like the new group of friends wants to go explore the house, and they drag the sister, and then like and then the nun, for whatever reason, who's a great actress, I was gonna write down who it was and I forgot to do that, but she like is practicing sword fighting in her room at one point, right? Yeah.
Yeah, checking the lines of sight killed me.
Yeah, so I guess we're in like my we're doing my first impressions and favorite bits. So I like they brought in this actor called Robert Jane. I think his name is Robert Jane, but he's the guy that played Melvin from their Tremors, and he plays Perry, the guy that knows about the demons, like the little expert in the movie.
Yeah,
who
yeah.
helps prepare all the squirt guns and tells the other guys what to do, but then like ultimately
demonology expert.
Yeah, exactly. So hey man, I like the guy that can deliver exposition in an entertaining way, and he's that dude, so it's cool to see him in this movie. So I liked his character. I always felt like if I was a horror movie character, I might be like this guy. Like, I would know a little bit about the demons, and then, like, but he gets punked out, so that kind of sucks. But he's one of my favorite bits, and my first impression of part two is, like, it's a rad little horror movie, man. Like, this is very entertaining. I think we're at, who did we miss? Did we rotate to Nick yet? No.
I haven't gone to me. Right. I thought this was a great sequel. I loved it. It was fun. Had the same energy, but brought its own style. A lot of head chopping off stuff going on. And I really loved the reference to the boob thing that Dave brought up earlier. I thought they did it in a cool way.
Yeah, I just wrote mutant boobs attack.
Yeah. I loved it. And it was a neat scene. What is it? Ben Stiller's wife.
Christine
Taylor.
Yeah. Christine Taylor, yeah.
His name was Marcia in this as well. Bunch.
What's funny about that is here's some trivia. Like this was before she was in the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
So they were again, it's a night of typecasting. Like they thought she was going to be a good Marcia or whatever, right? So and then it happened.
Well, man. She also has a typecast of playing Catholic schoolgirls because I just watched The Craft recently and she was in that in a Catholic school.
Not just Catholic schoolgirls, the bitchy Catholic schoolgirl. Like we got to make sure that we're talking like the mean girl of the Catholic schoolgirls. AA, I believe we're rounding out to you. Right?
Yeah, well, I like this one more than I like the first movie. And I think it did a couple things that the first movie didn't do for me. Hmm. And I think one is world building. Being immersed in the Catholic stuff that I didn't grow up in, but I'm aware of because I had friends that grew up in that environment and I've, touched on that. In some of my, having to go off to camp and stuff like that. And so I get it. So the way they built up these characters, so they actually felt like something for them before the movie gratuitously destroys them was a lot of that was a lot of fun. That aspect of the film. One of my favorite quotes of the movie is like, she's like, Is a kiss a sin? She goes, a kiss is a sin if it's an upper persuasion for a lower invasion. And I thought,
that's pretty good.
But, there's this guy they set up to be the hero jock. And, first he's, kind of jockey. And then later he's more affable. And you see, like, oh, he's got value and quality because they try to save Mouse from being sacrificed. And then not too long after that, he's unceremoniously got his head severed and then he becomes a demon.
That's the one of the cool aspects of this movie is like when the nun and the teens are working together, when they come together to try to fight the demons. It's kind of a cool element.
Mm-hmm. Also,
The
incredible regrowing nun head. That was impressive.
Yeah, that was fun.
It was definitely, I laughed.
Well, faith is a real power in this movie. So
yeah.
It's one of those horror movies, like, if the devil is real, then God has to be real, and you have to have, like, a balance. So, that's it. And whatever, buy into the mythology or don't, but actually, I agree with you. I like part two a lot. Like I would watch part two over and over again.
It's a fun sequel. Yeah.
Yeah. I was amazed at how much I liked this one. Yeah, I agree with everything everybody said. It built on the world of the first movie instead of just rinse and repeat. I really appreciated that.
And it doesn't seem like low, but it doesn't seem like cheesy. It still seems like it's still on par. They really did a great job.
Yeah.
After watching it, I was just kind of surprised of like, how is this movie not talked about more? Like the special, right? Some of the special effects are nuts in this. And it's just like, it's such an original horror. I mean, even though it's a sequel, it's an original horror movie in that like they do, like, it's just not like other, maybe Nightmare on Elm Street to a degree. I mean, just in terms of like weird visuals, but it's so different, which is why I love it.
It did not take a step down from the first one.
Not at all.
If anything, it took a step up, or at least the equivalent of. I thought the cinematography was really amazing, really well lit. It just looks so great. And then that is like this, like, you know, base level standard. But then the story is also good because it didn't even need to be a horror movie. That's why this movie's so good. It's actually interesting. Without the horror, mm-hmm. The horror starts to come in and become more and more real to the audience and the characters. But I mean, they could have easily just made this into like, you know, a high school or college movie.
Hmm. Yeah.
I mean, how far would you agree with that?
Yeah,
I mean, to a degree. I mean, the characters and stuff, but I mean, it's kind of a horror movie through and through. I mean, to my mind, but I see what you're saying.
I'm just commenting on the quality of the character development, how specific everyone is, and
right. That's unusually good for a horror movie that could just be thrown away on a shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And honestly, it kind of was because, like Dave said, I don't hear anyone talking about Night of the Demons 2. I mean, when was the last time you actually like, oh man, remember Night of the Demons 2? Like this is the first time I think I've talked about this movie since I saw it in 1995.
Well, that's a surprising thing is like, I talked to Dave. I was like, have we ever talked about these movies? Somewhere in within 300 episodes, we probably mentioned Night of the Demons at least
the first
once
ones
or twice.
For sure.
Right?
Yeah, I know we must have talked about the first one because I'm a huge fan of the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, not at any length, but we've probably been like, oh yeah, I'm watching this, or oh, by the way, this is also cool. Yeah. But not like, hey, this is this, and this is that, and watch part two. I guess, like, does anybody have any specific thoughts on part three?
I didn't watch it, so no. Okay. You guys did, though, right?
It exists.
Yeah.
It exists. It's actually hard to find. There's no, I don't think there's a DVD release. I don't think there's no, obviously there's no 4K restoration, you know. It would be cool if they put them all in a box set, 1, 2, and 3. That'd be kind of cool, actually. But still has the original Angela, which is cool. The ending of the movie is a little bit like Hammer Films. Like, Dave, do you remember we watched a movie about Dracula where he finally falls in the water and it kills him?
Yes.
So she finally crosses over the water line. And, like, evil spirits, this is like an old-school English myth, like, that evil spirits for some reason can't cross running water because of, like, its purity or something. Like, water, you know, streams run clear, right? So
Right. Well, wasn't that was the thing in the first one about the stream underneath? Or,
so they kind of use this as the killing method to get rid of Angela in the third one. But, oh, we also forgot to talk about how Angela mutated into a giant snake in part two.
Yeah,
it was cool. Basically the ending of Aladdin, but impressive.
But so at the end of three, she kind of mutates a little bit as she's being pulled through the invisible barrier and gets all melted, but only briefly. Three kind of sucks. It like, and there was this whole like video. There was a hotline to call in and talk to Angela, and to promote the movie. And this is what sucks about not having VHS anymore. Is like, remember they used to have things at the beginning and after to promote other films.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it'd be like, here's some commercials, coming attractions, and
really
at the end of the movie,
trailers.
Yeah, at the end of the movie, you would see a character come on, and like they would talk about their other movies or whatever, and you'd be like, wow, awesome. Now the world doesn't exist like that, so I don't know what form that would take. Maybe like a live stream with Freddy Krueger or something? You know what?
Your reputation seems to be gone.
What is it?
that kind of experimentation, because the stuff they used to do on VHS tapes, like, you know, there's all, it's like early video games. It's all over the place.
Or like an exclusive music video or something, you know, before like, what was that movie? Waxworks. They would have the Warren G music video on the VHS.
Yeah.
Stuff like that.
Or Duncan on the VHS for Nightmare 3.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I
think we had Nightmare on Elm Street 5, and I think there was a music video on that even.
Probably. I don't know what song it would be, but yeah.
I don't remember.
Well, didn't Freddie rap at one point? Didn't they bring him into like a music video at some point? I don't know. It feels like he did, but who knows. Adam, you watched part 3 today, right?
I only watched the beginning.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I didn't think we would be talking about it, so
I just wrote any thoughts, because there's two other movies in the series. There's the remake, and there is a part 3. That's why I said any thoughts. If anybody had any random thoughts about it, we could share it, but we don't have to go into it.
Something I really liked from the first movie is that the gate disappears, and it's an endless wall around the property. Like, that really was neat. In the second movie, they talk about it, but they don't show it.
Sure.
And in the third movie, at the very beginning, when a car enters through the gate, you see, like, it enters in some kind of, it crosses the barrier, and you see the vehicle go through some kind of, like, force field. So I thought that it was interesting that they kept that consistent through the three movies, but in different ways each time.
And the remake, as we've already said, would ruin the rest of would ruin the whole series, right? Like, yeah.
Horrible.
If you just, and what sucks is if you Google this movie, the one from 88 obviously doesn't, the first thing that comes up is the remake. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, like, if you just type in Night of the Demons movie, you see the remake. Or Night of the Demons series, and it's the remake, and it's the cover of the remake, and you're like, ah, damn, that sucks, because I bet you there's hundreds of people, because people are stupid, that hundreds of people probably went and watched the 2009 thinking, that's it. And so everybody's been talking about Night of the Demons, and they just assume people have been talking about a really shitty movie from 2009. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know how much of them investigated, oh no, there's like a whole thing, you know?
I don't hate the remake as much as you guys all do. I saw something else in it that,
all right, Adam,
that I had to forgive it for.
In five years, when you're a diehard horror movie fan, you're going to fucking hate the remake. Wait 5 years, and then you'll be like, damn it,
I don't think I'll change my opinion on this, because the problem with the film is solvable in post. And what they did is they put some kind of effect on the whole movie that was too high contrast. It was like day for night and too high contrast, because they're trying to hide some inferior unfinished effect or something that was going to cost too much to fix. So then they just put this blanket last minute measure on it.
And 2009, you're talking like HDX 1000 and HP DX 60 or whatever, like the first or second generation high definition cameras. So
I'm not sure what they shot it on. I'm just saying what you're seeing is not what the camera captured, because there's a period in the movie and the remake where they think that the sun is coming up. And then I could see that they lifted part of the effect in order to show sunlight. And I was like, oh man, there's so much more there. Like, there's just so much more clarity there and detail there. And I don't know what they shot it on. It could have been like an early HD camera, but I feel like a revisit of those original files and taking it to a different colorist, or
do you think that would save the movie though? Problem.
No, I was gonna say it's not gonna save the shitty acting in the terrible script.
What though? It's gonna pay for Edward Furlong's heroin for a week.
There's a lot of neat things in that movie. I mean, when she cuts the face off, and I don't know. There's some fun stuff in there. They changed the backstory a little bit so that seven people needed to become demons so the demons could escape the property. And the only time that they could do that was at night. So the original story was of Angela. She finds out their husband is turned after a seance or whatever.
Oh, my gosh.
Then she kills herself.
Oh my gosh. You know what I'm saying? Oh my gosh. We don't need it. We just don't need this movie.
I haven't seen it in 10 years. I don't even remember all that stuff. I just remember didn't like it. Yeah. Look,
you guys are I think, judging it harshly because it looks bad. So that's my theory. Because otherwise you'd give it a shot because Edward Furlong's in it.
I don't even know. That's why I didn't give it a shot. I just remember liking it.
I want to switch gears a little bit, and I want to say thank you to a couple of fans named Carolyn and Paul. They sent me a book. They sent me a copy, came today. They sent me a copy of I'm Dying Up Here, which actually got adapted into one of my favorite Showtime shows, also called I'm Dying Up Here. It's actually a drama about comedians, and they got real working comedians to be in the cast, and then some good actors from like our generation, like Andrew Santino, Clark Duke, Eric Griffin, Michael Angarano from like Sky High played a character called Eddie Zeidel he was like one of the comedians, and then RJ Seiler, who was recently in Power Rangers, this was like one of his first things that he did. There's Al Magrigal, who's a real comedian. Jake Lacy, who was like in the last season of The Office, was in this, and he was in what was that? High Fidelity. He's in the High Fidelity TV show now, but he was in this. This only had two seasons, but I was hoping for a third. It actually ends on a cliffhanger. You don't know if one of the characters is gonna die or not, and you'll never know. Like, this is like a running joke for me and Dave. Like, how many times have we talked about a show where you never get the answer because like the show just like just ends.
You the fan fiction.
Like, what? Quantum Leap ended that way, right? We don't actually know if he actually gets home, right? I think Quantum Leap was like that. Of the characters, I mean, you have to be, like, a diehard fan to know what I'm talking about now. Like, I relate to the characters of Eddie Zeidel and Nick Beverly, but I have bad luck, like Ron Shack, and sometimes I feel like I need to get my point across, like Bill Hobbs. These are all characters in the show I'm Dying Up Here, which is, like, again, about comedians. I thought it was cool. Because, like, behind the scenes, right? People working on their stand-up routines, right? The shit they go through. Like, there's a couple of guys that are living in a closet, and they go on a game show to try to get food for the week, and they end up getting, like, a year's supply of Rice Aroni, right? So, yeah, it's actually pretty good, but it was, like, kind of mixed. Like, they didn't know what to do with the show. It had Melissa Leo, you know, who won, like, the Oscar for that movie about the brother boxers. Played the mom. Yeah.
Does the show break the border of the book? I mean, I know you haven't read the book yet, but how closely did they follow the book?
Well, I mean, they had to make up these comedians. Like, they reference the real comedians because it's supposed to exist in our world. So they created a handful of comedians because they didn't have the rights to everybody's life stories, right? But they're clearly inspired by some of the other comedians, you know? So.
Hmm.
And obviously, the Goldie character, who was the club owner, played by Melissa Leo, was supposed to be Mitzi Shore, you know, who owned the comedy store, Pauly Shore's mom. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and there's a character that dies who might be George Miller. It may not be George Miller. Who knows? Like, it's hard to say because obviously the book is by, like, a New York Times reporter who was sent to California to cover all these comics and, like, was there when Robin Williams, like, made his, like, got discovered at the comedy store. You know, stuff like that. You know what I mean? So, there's no character in the show like Robin Williams. But there's characters that are like Richard Pryor, except for Richard Pryor shows up in the show. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So, like, they're out, like, a lot of the characters are adapted from comedians. Like, Eddie Zeidel reminds me of some of the early, like, SNL writers, and like Bud Freeman or something. But anyway, it's about a group of like comics trying to make it like in the 70s, like when the stuff was first popping. But hey, it's cool. I mean, I posted it on my Instagram. I thought it was cool that some of our listeners remembered that I talked about this before. Me and Dave, I think, talked about this like 6 months ago or something.
No, like, someone actually did that.
Yeah, so somebody listened and then like out of the blue just sent it to me. Like, that's pretty cool.
That's really cool.
So yeah, I was like, awesome. Yeah, I definitely got to give him props, you know?
Yeah, thank you, whoever did that. That's rad.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, the other things we've gotten, we used to get pictures. Nude girls used to send us pictures.
It's been
right?
A while.
We got that one Batman bikini picture.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we got a couple topless fans. That was like the early days where it was like party time, bro city. And then well,
drunken commentary days. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
And then somebody sent us a bottle. Well, sent me a bottle of. I don't know if they wanted us to promote it or something. I don't even remember the name of this. Blue Feather? Was it Blue Feather Vodka? This is a year. This is like,
that was a long time ago.
Yeah, this is like season two or season three. Yeah, like, it was like a vodka company in Florida. Right? Yeah. The only people that are trying to charm us now are the Sunday Scaries guys. But unfortunately, they're breaking Adam's heart because they still haven't sent him his free sample. And I actually subbed up. I was like so into their product that I went and signed up. And if you go to SundayScaries.com, anybody out there, you can punch in Binge 40 and get 40% off your vitamin gummy order if you so want to try it. It did take like 2 weeks for my order to show up. So, but that could be I don't know.
I check the mailbox every day with anticipation.
That's how excited Adam is to get this awesome product.
Like, if he lets us know, he's like, this is still not here, guys.
I'm actually
crying face emoji.
Okay, here's a theory. They sent it, but the mailman was like, oh, let me try these.
Oh, dang. He's got your gummies.
That's my theory. I don't know.
Do you know your postman on a first-name basis? You better go talk to Carl. Better go see what's going on.
I do give the mailman the stink eye now. I don't say hello to him anymore.
And he seems oddly calm, right? He seems super calm for a postman, right?
Well, here's the thing. Like, he never looks me in the eye because he's like, he knows he took the gummies.
Right.
Makes sense. Yeah.
I was able to sneak in another offer there. That was pretty exciting.
Yeah, that's good.
So what else are the binge watchers watching this week? Let's, Nick, are you watching anything cool this week?
I watched the classic Total Recall.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice.
Dude, it was so good. Still great. Yes. It's really good. Have you seen that movie lately?
Yeah, I watched it like a couple year or two ago. That movie still holds up.
Dude, and Paul Verhoeven, I just miss pure entertaining violence. That guy could do it like no other. Like RoboCop, Total Recall, Starship Troopers, like that guy knows how to make fun violence.
Yeah, Starship Troopers might actually be my favorite of his.
Yeah.
So good.
And three titties.
And
Mars, three boob scene. I'm just saying.
Who can forget that?
Who could ever forget that? That's my point. Yeah.
I mean, that'd be the reason to go to Mars, right? So you could hang out with the three-breasted hookers, right?
Yeah. Get your ass to Mars. Come on.
There
you go. What do they have Martian STDs, though?
Probably. Yeah.
Who knows what we got? Dave, what else are you watching?
I actually revisited a movie I haven't seen since the VHS days. Wes Craven's Serpent and the Rainbow.
This movie
that's about
so
like
much
ass,
dude.
That's it like is. Zombie voodoo, right?
Yeah.
Bill Pullman's in this. Based on a true story.
Wait, does he get nailed in the testicles in that movie?
He nails someone in the testicles, but not himself.
All right.
This actually has like some of the crazier nightmare sequences outside of Nightmare on Elm Street.
It does.
One particular, I don't want to ruin it for anybody that hasn't seen it, but there's one scene in there that like made me jump like crazy. This movie's tense. Like it's probably one of his most overlooked movies, honestly.
It really is. Yeah, he got a lot of hell when he made that too.
Did like, he? I was too young when it came out. So
no, there were not like people were trying to get him not to tell that story because. I don't know if anyone knows about this, but like supposedly there's some type of voodoo stuff and like people think you're dead and then you come back to life like a few days later. Like they give what I forget. It's been a while. They give
it's
you
a
like
neurotoxin. A it's real.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's real. Yeah. Where it's like stops your heart. So if you or stops like
you go into like a paralysis, you go into like a coma. Yeah.
So then like all these people would wake up and they'd be dead and they'd be buried. It's freaking crazy. It's really
That's a long time ago. That's why they put bells. With chains all the way down into the coffin because they would be like, this person's dead, and then have a funeral, bury them, and then next thing you know.
That's also where the vampire myth got started, too. Like, oh, shit. Back from the grave, we got to take them out.
Kill them up, yeah.
I was reading something crazy about gravediggers. They used to smash your teeth so you wouldn't have fangs, your teeth out, then put a stake in your heart and bury you that way.
Jeez.
And leave it there.
Well,
like, they couldn't remove the iron from your heart.
You're not going to ring the bell then.
No, you're not ringing any bells. Just we're going to double down and get the job done.
Get it.
What else are you watching, Adam?
I watched The Silence of the Lambs again and noticed all kinds of new stuff. Fascinated with how effective that movie is.
That movie really is. And there's so much like symbolism in that movie. I mean, that movie's incredible.
One disturbing scene was the Hannibal is like in the hall of miscreants, the awful, you know, people that have done terrible things. And the guy's like, oh, I cut, stabbed myself. I'm bleeding everywhere. And then he throws his, how do I semen and he hits her in the face with it. And I never saw that like that before, but they don't say what it is. And
they don't dwell on it. Yeah.
You know, and it's just so,
no, I'm sure
disgusting.
If they told you what it was, they would have to cut it from the movie.
Right? Yeah.
I'm sure the censor had been all over that.
I mean, it could have been something else, but yeah, that's what it was. And, you know, and then like one scene later, she's getting a call like, yeah, Hannibal just killed that guy. Like, same day.
Oh, that's crazy.
and it turns him around to helping her because he calls her immediately back down after giving her a hard time. And then he gives her a pro tip. Like, go check out my patient, such and such name. And then she goes on a hunt to find that information. Mm. And that actually, that negative event to her actually ingratiates him to her to help her in the case. So it's like a neat little turn. There's all kinds of little things in that movie. I watched a documentary a long time ago where they were really concerned with how close the actors were looking into the lens. They're looking like right into the lens sometimes and cutting back and forth. They didn't know if that would work or not.
Oh, like it could be like really fucked. Yeah.
Yeah. And because, you know, anybody that comes from, you know, the filmmaking environment, there's a 180 degree line imaginary where you're watching both people and you're turning your head. And that's why the cut works, is because your head's already in the other position. So cut. But then here, instead of doing a diagonal cut, like you're sitting at a table with two of the players, you are the other person. And they thought that might not play, but, you know, it wasn't a bridge too far. It works completely. And it's immersive. I mean, you're there. When Hannibal's there addressing you, it makes it that much more freaky, the performance that much more powerful. So,
yeah.
Is this the first time you saw that movie?
No, I just haven't seen it in a while.
Oh, okay. So it became pretty fresh again.
Yeah.
Cool. I watched that new one, Wolf of Snow Hollow, which is by Jim Cummings, who did a police drama a few years ago called Thunder Road. But he comes back with Robert Forster's in the cast, playing like a retiring sheriff who's sick and is having a hard time doing his job. And then like he has the most terrible homicide show up in his whole career, like a series of savage murders that may or may not be related to a werewolf. And his son is the sheriff who's taking over, but he's like having his own nervous breakdown. And the thing's pretty satirical about like police work and small town bullshit politics and like the stuff that would go on day to day. Meanwhile, all these murders are happening, and they do some crazy cool stuff with the camera work. Like, you feel claustrophobic, and like some of the moments actually remind me of that angst horror movie that we watched. Mm. And like, there's actually a scene in a diner where they're chopping up a bratwurst, and I was like, did these filmmakers actually watch angst? Because remember how awkward those diner scenes were in angst where he kept eating the sausage?
Yeah.
I feel like somebody who worked on this movie saw angst, because like they had the killer talking off screen. And they have the cameras really claustrophobic, like right before somebody's about to be victimized, like the camera's really close to them and you feel like terrified, just like, or not terrified, but like anxious, right? Like, and then some shit happens. So you're like, wow. And they spend time with the victims. Like they give like whole scenes to the victims rather than just like, they just get, here they are, they get murdered. It was like, you spend like these little mini vignettes with them, right? It's really good. It's like something, one of the better things I've seen recently. And like, if you like Robert Forster, you know, who was in
I do, loved him.
Yeah,
gosh, one of the lesser known Quentin Tarantino movies. What is it, Dave?
Oh, Jackie Brown.
Yeah, he's like one of the main characters in Jackie Brown. He's in a lot of TV shows. I mean, he's the guy has
Breaking
like a
Bad.
Yeah.
You know what's crazy is I didn't realize how many movies he made before he died, because He died December of last year. He did the El Camino movie. He did something for Apple TV. There's like three or four movies. It's one of those things where, like, wow, he did a lot of work before he passed.
Yeah, that's what's funny about some celebrities. It's like they almost know that their time is coming, so they go, they just go like
just
into rapid mode, and they just crank out projects to be immortalized. You just go, bing, bang, boom, like like what's his name? I think didn't David Bowie die of like cancer or something? And he's like releasing albums like right up until he dies or something, you know?
Yeah,
yeah.
Then this I also watched. What's that?
This happens a lot. I know, like a bunch of actors I've seen do this in the before they die. It's crazy.
Yeah,
I feel lucky to have met him. Briefly,
who
Foster?
Yeah.
Did you? Oh, cool. How? He seemed like a nice guy. Was he nice?
I don't know. Like, I knew that I recognized him, and I was like, "Hey!" And he's like, "Hey, what's going on?" And that was our whole meeting.
Oh yeah.
Well, anyway,
it was like,
you guys should definitely watch. Have you guys watched Snow Hollow yet? Wolf of Snow Hollow.
No,
you guys should definitely watch it.
Where it sounds good, though. I mean,
well, I watched it, and then, like, because we have the blog on the website now, right? And we have these articles. Like, I watched it, and then immediately went to my computer and wrote an article because I actually liked it. So
yeah.
Like, to be captivated to write about it is a pretty big deal, you know?
Yeah. We need you to write about the stinkers, too, John.
I do. Trust me.
I know. I just messed it
up. Cuban.
It's there, yeah.
It's leaking.
Well, you brought up Hubie, so now I gotta say, like, the Boston reporter that played the reporter in the movie dressed like Harley Quinn. There was a running joke in Hubie that, like, a bunch of chicks were dressed as Harley Quinn for Halloween. The reporter that dressed as Harley Quinn and appeared in the movie, she must have, like, what, called in sick one day at WGN Boston or something and, like, just went to the set and did it, and then, like...
So is that why
anyway,
she got fired?
A reporter got fired because she appeared in the movie, and then I don't know if she broke her contract with the TV station.
No, but was it because she called in sick that day? I was trying to figure out, like, why.
Yeah, like, exactly. Why would they fire her for appearing in a movie, right?
Didn't make sense.
Maybe it's just in the contract.
Or the movie's cursed, and that's just the beginning of the curse, and there's going to be a whole, you know, now terrible things are going to happen to the cast and crew of Hubie.
Everyone's going to get... There's going to be a new Salem witch trial.
Well, the other thing I watched doesn't have witches or trials, but I watched Love and Monsters, which takes place during the apocalypse, where there's, like, a situation with missiles and chemicals, and it makes all the insects and reptiles a bunch of giant monsters. So humans live in bunkers, and the main character is played by Dylan O'Brien, who you might remember from the Maze Runner movies. And,
okay.
And Michael Rooker shows up as, like, the mentor character who has a samurai sword and teaches the kid how to live in the wild with the monsters running around. It's actually wasn't bad. It was actually entertaining, which I had no expectations, obviously. That's the best way to see a movie. Don't expect anything from it, right? Because, obviously, usually expectations, you get disappointed.
Right.
But it's a digital release. It's a cheeseburger movie. It's what Dave would call a popcorn movie. Like, you don't think you're going to see, like, Shakespeare, but it's going to make you happy, at least for a Wednesday or Thursday night or whatever, you know? So.
Yep.
Sweet.
The fact that I got to watch a couple of movies this week is actually pretty exciting. Usually the only thing I watch is, like, the movies that we're watching for the show.
Mm.
So.
Always fun to have that extra time.
Yeah.
I tell you.
Yeah. We're probably going to end the month with... some Vampire Road movies, which is a sparse but kind of unique subgenre. So we're talking like they're from Dusk Till Dawn stuff. Near Dark. We're talking John Carpenter's Vampires and its sequel, Vampire Los Muertos, with Bon Jovi, no less.
Oh, shit.
And and there's that other one, too, that the kid from Dawson's Creek and Final Destination is in. What is that other one?
Forsaken?
Forsaken, yeah.
I think that might be the one I watch fresh for this because I've seen all these other movies. So
yeah,
that'll be the one I watch brand new.
Nice.
Cool.
Well, we did it. We finally talked about Night of the Demons.
About damn time.
And we talked about Hubie again. Yay.
That's your fault.
That's not my fault.
You brought it up. You were the. I think
I
you said
bring it up.
Who brought it up?
You only mentioned that you wrote. He asked if you wrote movies for bad reviews or reviews for bad movies. Like, well, yeah Hubie.
Yeah, but
I didn't say Hubie first. I didn't say the word Hubie first. I was talking
right,
around
I
it.
Didn't say
I'll take the blame either. For mentioning Hubie. All he said...
Like, we're getting into, like, verbal spats over who mentioned this awful movie.
And every week someone brings it up and like, God damn it, who did this time?
That's why there's some movies that don't speak their names, you know? We'll have to stop it. Like,
if we mention it on a third episode, there's going to be a sequel.
I'm afraid this is going to turn into a Bloody Mary thing if, like, you've mentioned it too many times, he shows up in your bedroom.
Adam Sandler's going to come and get us.
Wow. What's that impersonation of what Adam does that you can't stand that was cool when he was younger, but it doesn't play when he's old?
Want to touch the hiney? I don't know which one.
Hibbida-hibbida.
Or whoever he is.
What a crappy way to end an episode.
Night of the Demons.
Oh, yes. This is what we're going to do. Final thoughts, reasons to go back and watch Night of the Demons, or... Yeah, a final reason to revisit part one. Nick, why should they watch Night of the Demons?
Lawena Quigley? I think her name is? Watch it for her.
Linnea Quigley, yeah.
Yeah, for boobies and butt.
Is that the sweet girl?
No, she's the bad girl.
She was bad.
She's the 30-year-old teenage girl.
Yeah, I know. I'm looking at her going, like, that girl looks way too old.
I want to look cute for all the boys.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm like, wow, but what's wrong with her? Body's great, but yeah.
Well, that theft scene is pretty badass.
Dave?
You could...
You always want to look cute for all the boys.
True.
Never did.